Thank you very much, Bob Kessler. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, Friday ahead of the Memorial Day weekend. Max Temkin will be along a little bit later in the program. Max is one of the co-founders of Cards Against Humanity and so much more. He comes by from time to time. He got my attention with a tweet, I think it was this week or last week, about how much the federal government spends on cracking down on deadbeat student loan payers, the risk versus the return. And it turns out we spend something like $138 for every dollar we get back on cracking down on people who don't pay their student loans. Max tweeted out about it. I thought it was interesting. So I think we'll kick that around a little bit later. We start Fridays usually with Andrea Haines, who's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Chicago Tribune, was on the train this morning reading Blue Sky. Andrea, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
And actually, one of the articles, the chief article in Blue Sky today was about this company called Rentolutions, right? And the co-founder, Ryan Kuhn, is going to be on the program a little bit later. They've come up with a platform for people who are kind of part-time landlords, right? Not a full-time property management thing.
Yep, exactly. We called it DIY Landlords, and I'm sure he can tell you all about it, but it works on both sides for the renter and the landlord and kind of automates a lot of the processes that you have to do between each other.
So we'll talk to Ryan about that a little bit later in the show, but let's start with Mark Zuckerberg, who gave the commencement address to Harvard, right? Was it yesterday? Is it today? I know I was reading from prepared remarks.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it was yesterday.
Okay.
So he went back after dropping out.
This is amazing to me.
In 2007.
He dropped out 12 years ago.
Yes.
He has changed our lives this much in just 12 years.
Yes, yes. Actually, yes, you're right. It was 2005. I'm saying 2007, but it was 2005. So he famously dropped out of Harvard, went on to found Facebook, and now has a net worth of $62 billion. So he did okay, and they invited him back.
But he doesn't have his degree. And I worry about that,
Andrea. I believe he now has an honorary degree, which is just as good at this point.
So what was the crux of it? Fly me to the moon, you know,
kind of
raise families. What is it? What was he telling his
students? You know, he's been on this national tour and taking on all these sort of bigger, more thematic issues. People speculate that he's running for office at some point, which he has so far denied. But this speech was on that vein, like talking about the really big problems of the world and how millennials need to join in and like really find a cause for themselves. And he talked about defining works of previous generations, like the Hoover Dam, the space program. You know, now he's talking about climate change and global pandemics. So he's talking about very lofty issues.
I was interested in his, he said, understand yourself as a global citizen rather than belonging to any nation state.
Yeah, interesting, right? Facebook is a very global company and he has a very global viewpoint.
That's an interesting thing for someone who might want to be a candidate to say, though, because I don't know that that would play well with a lot of voters.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not now, but you know, he's a young man. He's 33 years old. So he's got loads and loads of time ahead of him, hopefully. And, you know, he could be running for president, maybe not now, but, you know, down the line. Society's changed a little bit more.
Well, Donald Trump is 70 years old, right? So
yep.
Zuckerberg could be running in 50 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Think of that, 50 years from now. But it is amazing to have read that. And he said, look, we walked these same lawns. We slept through the same lectures. Truly of these students. I mean, he was only there 12 years ago.
Yeah, it must be interesting for the students to see somebody so near their own age. You know, it isn't like somebody coming back at 50, 60 years old and saying, here's what I did. And maybe it feels a little bit irrelevant to your world now. Here's somebody who just, you know, in the last just over a decade has done all this.
Youngest ever, right, to address the commencement crowd there.
Yes, according to Facebook, he's the youngest to do that.
Okay, well, while with that, something else you guys wrote about, since we're talking about graduates and their money, there was a big gift to the University of Chicago that we heard a lot about, the Duchossois gift to Northwestern, I think, earlier this week.
Uh-huh.
And so now this guy, Tandian Rustandi, has given $20 million to the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. $20 million. Now, the reason I bring it up is because he is a young man as well, right? He graduated from Booth in 2007, 10 years ago.
He did. Got an MBA in 2007. So I'm not sure what his age was at that time, but yeah, definitely has had apparently time to make enough money that he's donating $20 million. And he's really focused on social innovation, which is an interesting, you know, different aspect.
How do you mean? What is that? What's
sort of
that
focused
mean?
On, you know, nonprofits, companies with a social cause, all those kinds of things. Booth has a social new venture challenge where it encourages that type of entrepreneurship. So he's really in line with that part of it.
All right. So he graduated from undergrad in 87. So he's a little closer to my age than Mark Zuckerberg, but because he gave $6 million to his undergrad school, too. Not too shabby. He's doing okay.
Yeah.
I sit on the train and I play Candy Crush.
Oh, Candy Crush.
What's up with Candy Crush?
So there's two kinds of people in the world, right? Those who play Candy Crush and those who say, please never send me another Facebook notification about Candy Crush. I'm the latter, I'm afraid. I never got into that one.
I don't ever want to have a notification from anyone about playing anything.
Yeah,
so
I think
just
the notifications are over, right? We've had it with those.
But I have played Candy Crush just to see what it's about, and I don't quite get what it's about. I've never really caught it. I'm more of a solitaire guy.
Yeah, well,
but there's now a class action lawsuit from Candy Crush players?
So there is. There's a class action lawsuit, and because the originator of it is in the Chicago area, it is coming out of Chicago, even though the company is based in California. So a federal judge in Chicago is allowing a proposed class action lawsuit to go forward. And here's what that's all about. So King is the maker of Candy Crush. And, you know, when you play this game, you have lives, like in most games, right? You need lives to continue. And one of the ways you could earn lives is you could buy them. You can buy them 5 lives for 99 cents.
You pay money for a life.
You can pay money for a life. Or you can connect your account to Facebook. And here's where we all know Candy Crush from, even if we don't play it. And then in return for basically marketing the game to your friends, you would get free lives to spend
right.
on the game.
So if your friend signs up or you sell them,
yes.
push it on them, you get lives.
Exactly. So it made everyone little mini marketers of the game so that they could get free lives. And then you would see people on Facebook saying, please never send me another Candy Crush notification again.
And someone has found something to sue about over this?
Or else. So what happened was, according to the lawsuit, according to the lawsuit, those lives that people earned by tormenting their friends then disappeared. So the lawsuit is arguing that these lives that they earned have monetary value corresponding to the value it would take to buy them, which would be 20 cents a piece. And so for all these millions of users that lost lives that they earned, they should be compensated for
those. How many lost lives are we talking about? Do you
have
any idea?
There are a lot. It's something like 20. It was 25 million people. I'm not sure if they calculated how many lives that adds up to, but it was 25 million users. So it's a lot.
Okay, let me ask you this. I played Candy Crush maybe 10 times in my life. It didn't cost me anything to play it, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably a premium, right, to get, like, buy lives.
So you get more if you pay to where you buy the lives. Okay, well.
Buy lives, extend your play.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good to know. This is another reason to never play Candy Crush, maybe. I don't quite get that one. One other, we're just about out of time, but there was a great interview that I read recently from a guy. Where's his name now? I've lost the name. Oh, Marshall Brown, Associate Professor of Architecture, Illinois Institute of Technology, about how driverless cars and all that are going to change us. I mean, it's really too big to talk about in a minute, but just tell me a little bit about what we're learning by hearing from Marshall Brown.
Yeah, so this is kind of looking ahead at 2050, and like what he's talking about is sort of this driverless city situation and expanding our minds about what that could mean. And one of like the really intriguing ideas he drops is like when we have autonomous vehicles, how that affect how much land we have to allocate to parking and things like that, and poses one really interesting idea, which is if you live in downtown Chicago and there's no place to park, what if your car could go to Indiana and sleep for the night?
Right, so he's envisioning a world where my car could drop me off at my condo,
yep.
and then drive 50 miles away.
Or 20, really.
Or 20,
right. To get
right.
to Indiana nearby.
And just be out of the city, sit there where there's free parking and land, and then come back and pick me up when it's time the next day.
Exactly. I love this because it's just, you know, we talk about this stuff, but it like really starts to bend your mind to think about the huge changes.
Well, that's what struck me about it. Because and Zuckerberg said this too in his speech at Harvard. He said, you know, we need to start imagining new things. We need to use our imagination. And that's what Marshall Brown is saying too. We don't have the data about how this is going to work. And we rely too much on data sometimes. Maybe we start to need to reimagine how things are going to go and to try things and to take risks.
Yeah, because how do you even try to think about what things will be like 30 plus years from now with as fast as technology is moving?
Yeah, it's a very cool thing. So people should, this will be your homework for the holiday weekend. Read this interview with Marshall Brown. How do people find it?
Absolutely. It's on blueskyinnovation.com.
And you don't have to read it because you already have, I'm sure.
I have read it. And in fact, I'm actually leading a panel that he's going to be on
June.
So I'll have more to maybe say about it then because he has some interesting ideas.
Let's have him on ahead of it maybe too, get some publicity for
That'd
it.
That'd be great.
Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, Chicago Tribune. Have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you.
It is 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Max Temkin, co-creator of Cards Against Humanity, will be in the studio in about 20 minutes or so. Later in the program as well, we'll talk to Ryan Kuhn. Do you rent out a condo or an apartment or two or maybe a house and are tired of trying to keep track of it all with spreadsheets and all of that, there is a software company called Rentolutions. It's a platform for you guys, do-it-yourself landlords. And we'll talk to Ryan about that coming up. But right now, Tom Gimbel is on a phone line, the CEO of LaSalle Network. He joins us most Fridays. Tom, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Always good to be with you, Steve.
All right, you ready for a big, long holiday weekend? Have you already gotten started? Is that why you're not here today?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm doing tying a little business and then having dinner with a friend. So I am in Washington, D.C. Today.
The friend's in Sicily. He's not coming back, I think, until tomorrow.
Yeah. How are you?
Great, thanks. All right, so today we're talking about, I guess, this idea of, you know, as a guy who's placing people, sometimes there are companies looking for employees and the companies maybe don't have a great reputation, whether it's deserved for the way they behave or maybe it's just some sort of public persona that they have. How do you cut through that when you're working for a company trying to find good workers?
Well, when you want to hire people and your company may be viewed in not the most positive light, even if it's just you're not viewed as one of the upper echelon in your industry or you have some negative reputation that's historical in context.
Everyone wants to work for Google and you're making sidewalk pavers.
So what you need to do is figure out the type of person that's going to be interested. You're not competing against Google for the same people that they want. And it's about being comfortable in who you are as a company, an employer, and a manager, and what the skills are you need. Everyone's not going out with the supermodel on Saturday night, right? It's the exact right. Same premise. You've got to find the person that wants you and that you can add value. Now, it may be somebody who's a job hopper and you're going to give them the stability they want. It may be somebody who's not viewed at their own company or another company as somebody who's ready for the next promotion, but you're willing to give them a chance. It may be, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that you can get somebody to want to join you.
Yeah, but okay, a lot of those guys who aren't going out with the supermodels this weekend, which has never been a problem for me, are in their mind they're settling. Well, I'm going to settle. I'm going to take this person or that guy or that girl or something like that. If you're trying to hire, I would imagine you don't want to think you're settling.
Well, I mean, Avis made a big company out of saying it's okay to be number two,
yeah,
right?
Okay, you're right.
It's really being comfortable with what you are and where you fit. And I'll tell you this, we deal with a lot of companies that might not be the sexiest of industries or companies, and they'll say a lot, we don't want somebody who wants to be the next CEO. We're looking for somebody, and we coach them on this, to look for somebody who wants to come in and realize they may only be at your company for 3 or 4 years.
Right, right.
People think you have to hire somebody to be there for 25 years. Being a stepping stone for somebody, that's not a bad place to be in the market.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. So, I mean, I'm thinking of college basketball programs or football programs are that way, you know, where they're mid-level or whatever, where you bring in a coach, you want to bring in the best talent, but you also know that they're probably not going to be with you. They're going to use that position to go on to something else.
And so you have to look at that situation as an opportunity. So how are you going to groom it? In the hiring in the HR world, it's called succession planning, right? Who are you bringing in underneath this person? How are you going to groom the next go-around so when that person leaves that you're ready and you don't have to do an external search? So you start this process of preparing well in advance. It's kind of like preventive medicine. It's not always fun. It takes a little bit of time. But if you eat healthy and you do things the right way, when something bad happens, you're actually ready for it. And if you run your company that way or your division that way, you're actually providing a healthier culture, and eventually you'll attract really good people.
That's interesting. Way to think of it. So embrace it rather than pretend it's not true. I mean, if you're a college basketball fan and your coach keeps leaving after 7 years, it's time to stop being surprised by that. And if you're the school or the company, realize what you are and try to maximize the talent you can get for that situation, knowing that that situation is probably not going to change.
That's absolutely right. Everybody wants to be Alabama or Penn State or whatever it might be, and that's not the case. There's a few companies that are like that. But even a company like GE, that bringing it back to the corporate sense, where people are lifers there, there's still people that leave there and go on to other places because they get that GE foundation, and they have huge alumni networks and alumni programs. It's really important to say, what do we want our company to be, and who are the types of people that can fit in and appreciate what we are? Like me for what I am, not what you want me to be.
Tom Gimbel is the founder, CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us today.
You too, Steve. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you very much, Bob Kessler. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is a Friday, May 26th, just ahead of the Memorial Day weekend. And Max Temkin is in the studio, one of the co-creators of Cards Against Humanity. One of my favorite guys. I love talking to you, Max. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
And so we should say we were just having, who would have thought, a discussion about political philosophy off the air.
Yeah.
You're a philosopher?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm a philosopher. I have a philosophy degree, so it's like I'm one of the lucky few who managed to like find gainful employment.
So I have two kids in college, and they're both studying. Well, I might have picked a more lucrative position for them, but it's not philosophy.
Okay.
What did your parents say when you told them you were going to go into philosophy?
Oh, man. I think at that point, my parents were just happy that I was, like, doing something productive with my life, that I was, like, in school.
But they saw you, too. You probably showed early on that you had a creative flair or that you were going to make it.
Not if you had looked at my GPA.
No, not if you were going to go to the counselor's office at Highland Park High School.
Yeah, I took one of those career aptitude tests where you answer a bunch of questions and it tells you what you're going to do. And it was like, mine was like, you should become a candlestick maker or assemble boxes. Those are the two careers that it was like work with your hands.
Okay,
you know?
You're making that up, right?
No, those are two careers
really?
That the top two careers it suggests.
My high school guidance counselor told me I should be an FBI agent.
Could have been fired by Trump.
We both did okay.
Yeah,
I think we did okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what grabbed my attention from you this, I follow you on Twitter and you tweeted out this article.
I'm so sorry.
I don't read all of them because some of them are just, over my head. but this one was an article from Bloomberg and it was about how much the federal government spends to recoup late payments for student loans, right?
I mean,
the figures are, I think the average student comes out with $26,000 in student loans now. A lot of people fall behind. So it's in the government's interest to collect some of that money. They just don't do it in a very economically feasible way.
Yeah, well, this article caught my eye because, you obviously hear a lot of the debate over student loans. And, obviously at the Bernie plan that was adopted into the Democratic party policy for, debt-free graduation. And I think this stuff tends to get pretty like dry and academic, and people sort of forget at the micro level, like, how do these stories play out for individual people? How does it affect people's lives? And even if you're not a student who's in debt, even if you're like, I'm all paid off on my loans, I assume you are as well, but
right.
Like, how does that affect us, right? How are we suffering under this system? And this article really caught my attention. So, like you said, student debt is a huge industry. There's $1.4 trillion of debt. That's more student debt than credit card debt now. The average student graduating college has $37,000 in debt. And about 10% of all students graduating become delinquent in their debt. So like you said, the government has an interest in helping these debt collectors get the students out of delinquency and get them to actually pay off their loans.
Delinquency equals, I think, 9 months, right, without a payment?
That's correct. Okay. 9 months without a payment. So there was this study. So this was an article that caught my eye in Bloomberg Business Week by Shahin Nasipour. And it was writing about a study by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So basically, this is looking at a program through the Department of Education that's designed to help students enter a period of what's called rehabilitation. So rehabilitation on debt payments mean that you make a minimum of a $5 monthly payment for 9 months. So once you do that, you're like back in good standing.
Right.
And the government's decided this is what's in the interest of the American people is to get these students into rehabilitation.
You can be thousands and thousands behind.
Right.
But if you pay $5 a month for 9 months, You're good.
You're back. You're at least on a schedule, right?
You're
at least contributing something. So every time a debt collector, and these debt collectors are private companies that have a contract with the Department of Education, every time a debt collector gets a student into rehabilitation, meaning they pay that $5 for 9 months, the debt collector is awarded $1,710 from the U.S. Department of Education.
So if I'm a collector and you're a delinquent,
yeah.
I could go, I say, Max, here's $45.
Yeah, right.
Pay five of them a month for the next 9 months. I'm going to walk away more than $1,700 up.
That's about right. And what's crazy is that the debt collector gets to keep that payment from the Department of Education, even if the student goes back into default on their loans, which more than 50% of them do.
So I'm imagining if I'm a debt collector, I want these government contracts.
Yeah, they're pretty good contracts. I mean, so to quote the article, They said this means the education department is paying its debt collectors up to $1,700 per borrower to collect around $45, regardless of whether the borrower continues to make her his or her payments. And what that means for taxpayers like you and I is we are paying to collect $1 of student debt from some poor kid out there who's just struggling to like pay their rent. We're paying $38 to wring them like a bar rag to get $1 of
so
debt payment.
So for every $38 spent, the government gets a dollar.
Gets $1
they
back.
They lose $37.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no incentive, right, for these collectors. I mean, they get their $1,700. If the guy, like, maybe you just said that. If people go back into default, they don't have to give that money back.
That's right. They have no skin in the game. Yeah. So to me, when I see this story, I mean, it's a crazy story, right? And you, and one of the, I think one interpretation of this story, I think depending on your sort of where you are on the political spectrum, this story can mean different things for you. You know, a more conservative reading might say, oh, the government's no good at anything. We can't even collect debt from these students.
Yeah, but of terrible course, way to spend your money.
Yeah, but of course, like, well, what we're not, the public interest in having like a smart populace that can like read a book and lead a good life and get a job, that's not, we're not trying to make money on this. We're just trying to give people a good life. Like that program should operate at a loss. That's why it's a government project. It's an investment of a society in the people that live in the society. So when I see the story, I see two big victims here. I see the victim of regular people like you and me who are through no like, I don't give up. I don't care if students pay their debt or not. I think students should have debts, protests and debt strikes and refuse to pay it. I think it's usurious, but you know, nonetheless, so I don't, you know, that's how my tax money is being spent. But the other victim here is the students themselves. Like I saw this other, there's this other crazy story that ran in the Atlantic, and they were looking at this, the question recently of, can a student work their way through college, right? Like
I think
I think that used to be a big part of the story of a kid would work really hard and put themselves through college. So they were looking at Michigan State University as a case study. So in 1979, one credit hour at Michigan State University was $24.50. So adjusted for inflation today, that's $79.23. Okay, so one credit hour is $80 at Michigan State University. Today, a credit hour is $428, which basically, what does that mean? It means it's no longer possible for a student, even if they work, even if they're in college full time, you know, busting their ass to make it through college,
they can't do
40
it.
Hours a week, it's no longer possible to do it.
And so, and then who gets rich off that? The debt collectors when
private
you
companies,
can't, right?
Exactly. Private companies who are squeezing these kids for every, you know, dollar that they make. And then you get these ridiculous takes online where it's like, oh, millennials are spending all their money on avocado toast. You know,
right,
that's
right,
why
right.
That's why they can't afford to buy houses.
There's always contempt for the younger generation.
Right.
Right. And no matter what, if it's yuppies, if it's whatever right. it is, there's always contempt. All right. That's Max Temkin, co-creator of Cards Against Humanity. You guys have an event coming up tonight, right?
We do. We have a really fun show that is funny and not at all sad and frustrating like this story. It's the Greenhouse Theater tonight, and it's our late night Cards Against Humanity writers room. So if people want to come and hear us talk about funny things, it's $10 at the door and come and hang out.
Where do people find more information?
You can go to cardsagainsthumanity.com/Chicago and find out about all of our live shows.
People will come up with ideas for future cards.
And we'll test them out live on stage.
And as the PR release says, the worst suggestions will be mercilessly ridiculed.
That's accurate.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Good to see you, Max.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, are you a landlord? There's this platform called Rentolutions. Ryan Kuhn is the co-founder of it, and he joins us on a phone line now. Ryan, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Yeah, I was reading, and actually, Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky, was in on the show earlier, and Blue Sky featured an article on you guys, Rentolutions, today. So I thought it'd be nice to talk to you as well. Tell me about it. The idea is this for landlords or is this for renters, the people who live in the landlord's apartments?
Yeah, so our platform is designed to help both the landlords and the renters. Both users get the most value when both parties are involved.
So the idea is if I, well, I do have a condo, and if I were in the process of renting it out or something like that, you know, I might keep track on my Quicken Books or something, or in my own ledger. But Rentolutions allows me to keep the records on that platform, but also then for my tenant to pay me through that platform. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So in the United States, there's about 8 million individuals who are busy, full-time working professionals and part-time landlords. And for them, we've built this platform, which is really meant to design to save them time as they find tenants, screen their tenants, create and sign leases, collect payments, and track and manage their maintenance requests.
How long have you been up and running?
We've been around for about 4 years now.
And you've got, I'm going to make a number up. Did I see 30,000? How many people work with you?
Yeah, there's more than 30,000 individual landlords in the U.S. who work with our platform today.
That's quite a success over 4 years. You must be pleased.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. But out of 8 million out there, we're just scratching the surface.
You've got some more to go. And I know you came into some cash, right? You just picked up $2 million in funding. How are you going to use that new money? Does that mean you're going to use that to go after the rest of the 8 million, or are you going to offer the 30,000 you have now more services?
Yeah, it's both of those, Steve. So we look at how can we affect and help more of these landlords, but also how can we continue enhancing our platform to deliver them a better product, better user experience.
And so what would be your sweet spot? How many users would you like to have? I mean, I know you're not going to get all 8 million.
Yeah, so we focus on landlords with fewer than 10 units. And anyone out there who owns anywhere from a single family home to a condo unit that they rent out, that's our target customer.
And only
and
10
we really want to help as many of
I'm sorry, only 10% of your customers pay for the service? Do you get the money in other ways?
Yeah, that's right. So our platform is completely free for landlords with one unit. The other way that we make money is by partnering with big brands out there like State Farm, TransUnion, Two Men in a Truck.
So if you, for a tenant or a landlord, you say you can get a credit check, by the way, you can do it through TransUnion, you pick up revenue that way.
Yep, that's right.
All right, Ryan Kuhn, the co-founder of Rentolutions. Where do people find more information?
They can find us on rentolutions.com or on social media. We're Rentolutions on all the platforms.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck. I appreciate you talking to me.
Thanks, Steve.